Hi folks, welcome to the next edition of Serverless Crack. We're here good to go for another podcast. How's everybody doing today? Join the storm.
No, hey guys. No, I've been playing around with shout out to Alberto Brandolini and aggregate modeling and challenging myself with some of that sort of technique and practice, which has been really good. So I'm having a really good day today, which is good. How about you, Mark?
All good. It's Friday, so been another busy week. Lots of good sort of mechanisms and practices being embedded into teams, which is always good to see. And like your Friday aggregate modeling session, I was very envious listening to you. That was
All
good
good.
to hear.
All
I'm
good.
just trying not. I'm just trying not to get soaked in the rain, unsuccessfully. So we're kind of chatting. One of the things that we were is kind of been in the news this past couple of weeks is the whole idea of developer productivity. Ooh, we thought we wouldn't go there, but let's go there. And this kind of kicked off. There was an interesting article or that McKinsey brought out around a framework for measuring developer productivity. Not really going to comment too much on that. It's no, it is what it is. But what's really interesting is Dan North, who we know well and respect. He's a brilliant technical leader and a fantastic speaker and writer. He's followed him for many, many years. He's brilliant, super smart guy, and really nice guy as well. And he wrote an article as if someone had said to him, "Could you please do like an assessment of the McKinsey article?" So he did a what he would say a very polite, fair, and even-handed assessment. So it's a pretty good read, but the thing that I find surprising that has never gone away for, and you hear people talking about this in the 80s, or read about people talking about this idea of being paid by lines of code, and it was even rubbished in the 80s that this was a really stupid thing to do. There was a famous story about people removing bad code from the code base and having negative numbers by the end of the week, and then being asked did they have to pay the company back money. So it's never really been a good idea. So it strikes me as strange that in 2023 we're still having the same conversation. Super interesting area.
Yeah, I mean, I think my first reaction to it when I read both articles, and I had the same thing. I was like, this feels like it was something from the 90s. And I'm even when you try and take like a positive or assuming positive intent stats with that, you're kind of, we talk about like mixed methods, and sometimes, or even if you think about it in terms of like the Kinevin framework, you've got chaotic, chaos, complex, known, that flow. If something's known and it's predictable, and and it is sort of kind of like stacking boxes or whatever, you can maybe be a wee bit more predict, you can, predict how long it'll take to do something and what you would expect to see, and if you want to be positive, you can kind of squint at it sideways and look at it that. But in terms of how modern software development works, it didn't, it's very different these days. And there's a huge amount of thought work that goes in to certain things, and making sure you're doing things the right way and stuff like that, which didn't really come across or
Only
anyways.
there was a company that would help you write code, like ThoughtWorks or something like that. It could even be a great company for someone to form. It totally is ThoughtWorks, and I've always thought that. But there's always been a bunch of developers who think, well, we get paid to write code, so we write code all day. And we've talked at length that this is not what the job is. I often talk about we're software engineers, not developers. You're really solving problems. You're not writing code. If you're paid to write code, then that's very easy to kind of automate and replace, and that's not where your value is. Of course, it often will end up in writing code to solve something. That's a really important part of the job, but it's not all the job. It goes back to the splitting things by function, back to the socio-technical stuff. If you have different functions, there's going to be a dis there's going to be a disjoint between them. I thought Dan was really good the way he says he's identified several areas of weakness and factual errors. Yeah, it's definitely worth a read, both his article and the McKinsey article. Because, but what gets me is the fact that McKinsey aren't stupid. They're a very smart company. They clearly see a massive demand for this. There's probably lots of companies who are asking this question, and that's the thing that's probably a bit more worrying. The many maybe big large companies who want to kind of turn up the heat in the factory with the developers and get them to write more code, whatever the thinking is. I don't know.
I guess Tega points towards the criticality of software in most businesses now, and most businesses will become sort of software companies over time, right? And software becomes such a critical part of their value chain and how they deliver outcomes and value to whoever their users are, whoever their customers are. So I think it's more, there's a need there for how do we do this well? How do we get the most benefit from our investment in tech and IT and then developers? Because it is a fairly big cost center for a lot of organizations, but it's not you don't want to measure this stuff. You want to measure the impact and the outcomes of your teams, and you want to measure, are they actually solving your business problems? Are they meeting the needs of your users? That's what you should be measuring.
Yeah, and you're kind of wondering like how companies would use like the what worry me about that sort of thing is how companies would use that sort of framework. Like if I was to ask you guys, what would you think if you were to go into an organization and we're going to evaluate your proficiency based on the a big factor that's going to be your number of lines of code. You'd be I don't know about you, but I'd be asking myself serious questions about my ability to actually perform in such an organization, because in my head it's. You said it there, Mark, it's the outcomes and it's the so what problems are we trying to solve? How are we actually approaching those problems? And then beginning to then iterate and experiment and move forward and have actually good outcomes, which is for the most part, it doesn't involve code,
Yeah, well, it's the whole code is a liability thing, and being able to know when a capability has evolved to the point that you don't need to build it. I mean, imagine you're sitting in one of those organizations, and somebody says, "We need a document management system." There's two paths. You can say, "Okay, let's figure out what kind of document management system we need, and let's start building that, and let's go down that path." Or you could just say, "Let's use S3." But would you get a massive bonus for saying let's use S3 and some other team goes off and does the maybe does the integration? I don't know where that would stack up in developer productivity, but I would say that's been extremely productive. Let's not build that. You know what I mean?
100%, 100%. And then you guys as engineers, I mean, even with your experience, I don't know about you, but certainly from my experience, the scenarios that kind of stress me out the most, I'm kind of walking into sometimes is where maybe there isn't a clear picture in terms of the problem, the priorities, and then I'm literally confronted with reams of code bases. And I'm using the code bases trying to work out what's going on in order to kind of correct and and it's like it's way too late, at that point to kind of rescue any kind of successful or good business outcome. They literally have just focused on, straight to the workspace, starting writing, code out the door. And it's like, that's it goes back to our mantra, our slow is smooth and smooth is fast, isn't it? Take your time,
Slow down,
understand
yep.
What's your business problem? What's the business architecture? What's the technical architecture? And then what's the most sensible approach to your first kind of deliverable? And then
Yeah.
begin on that rapid incrementation way of working.
You don't want a beautifully engineered, all the developer metrics are beautiful, everything's really productive for a problem you don't actually have, or for a need you don't actually have, right? It's like, so all your metrics will look beautiful, all your developer productivity metrics will look fantastic. But you're not actually delivering any key business outcomes or any impact because you haven't thought about your clarity of purpose up front. You haven't thought about, well, who are the users? What are their needs? What are those key indicators of progress or
Well,
success, right?
let me pose a question to you. If you're in an org and you're working the way we would work and you are focused on business outcomes and those are the things you're measuring your success against, and all of a sudden, Mark, your code commits go through the roof, what does it indicate? It indicates to me that there's a serious problem. If your most experienced engineers' code commits go through the roof or elevate in any kind of abnormal way, there's something weird going on,
It's the whole you want your best engineers, your best thinkers doing the thinking up front, not actually typing out the code for the most part, right? They want the real 10x developers are those who can think about the problem space and help the team address that problem, right? With the least amount of
10x
code
those on
possible,
it.
right?
Yeah. And then there's a nice segue into some of the AI dev tools. That's where that kind of report kind of went to. if you do measure developer productivity, can like Copilot or Code Whisperer help, or ChatGPT? I mean, there's a couple of interesting use cases, and I've been saying this for many years. A decent AI system will augment what you do, doesn't necessarily replace what you do. And it's no different for software engineers. It could be, you might say, how do I write a function in Node, which maybe, makes a different call or does a certain thing, and it'll generate a piece of code. Or you can say, here's a piece of code in, I don't know, Rust. Tell me what this does. You know what I mean? But then I don't think that's going to help with the legacy code base. We have a couple of tens of
No.
thousands of lines of code because it's probably all spaghetti madness anyway, so it's, again, the dev tools I think are interesting, but I would say it's really just an acceleration point. If you want to, if you do have to poke at something or troubleshoot, it's nice to give you a quick prompt.
Yeah, no, I think there is huge productivity gains within that area, that space, right? If you want to write something in a new language, if you do something you're not familiar with, the AI companions, co-pilots can help guide you on that journey and help address some of those issues and help you learn and help you to guide you and what
Well,
comes for a manager. But again, it's back to that. That's not your critical path for delivering business outcomes, right? That's you're almost. If you over focus on some of this stuff, then you're optimizing the wrong part of your value chain, right?
yeah, I think in this sort of in the context of that sort of the overall conversation here, I think not to be alarmist about it, but you can almost say like it would make good developers better and bad developers worse. Like so if you're in a scenario where you're being measured by the lines of code, this thing is, if you're shipping code that you haven't written and you're not really too okay with how it's hanging together, it's working, there's risk involved with that. There has to be. Whereas
Definitely.
what you're describing there, Mark, like and Dave, is good engineers will use it to maybe experiment with something or to go and learn something or to verify or check something, but they will take ownership and responsibility for whatever it is they're delivering on the back of it.
Yeah, that's even back to the whole like BDD and testing type scenarios, right? It's like, well, what are you actually trying to develop code for? What test are you trying to make pass? And then you back to, well, what business behavior are you trying to actually implement here? Okay, well, what KPI is that actually trying to influence? What user and what needs do they have that you're trying to deliver these behaviors for and these capabilities for? So it's almost like when you're starting to think, okay, well, I can generate the code really quickly. Okay, well, what tests am I trying to make pass? What behaviors are they trying to help influence? What business KPI or business value is that trying to deliver? So it's if it frees you up to think more about those things, then maybe it's a net positive, right?
That's the hard part. I always find when you're talking to the team, especially, you ask them what's your business KPI. If the team knows and they're really clear what they need to build and they know when they've built it and they can measure how well it's been built. But when the team goes, I don't know, and need to think about that, or need to go talk to someone, that's where you think, oh, it's going to be difficult. Because if the team can't think up a good business KPI for what they're building, it means they're not really clear. They've just been asked to build something. They don't really know why, which again all leads back to the North Star stuff about having that clarity of purpose. I mean, and that for me is the hard part, that it's very difficult to put into developer productivity because there's a whole joined upness there. If the time a piece of work gets to the team, if there's some clarity on what it is, or the team know who to talk to find out what it is, and then they can solve the problem. You know what I mean? But poor understanding of the problem, there's no magic tool or developer productivity technique will help that out.
Yeah, I think once you have that clarity of purpose, you can map out sort of the value chain of components and see where is the actual inertia barriers to you doing rapid product delivery. So it may not be that coding is the problem, it could be your release process is the problem, it could be your cloud infrastructure is the problem. There could be any number of things that are the barriers to true developer productivity. It may not be the writing of the code that is the problem, it's actually these other things in your ecosystem that you need to address.
It might even be a function outside engineering, but we'll not go there.
No.
But I mean, I think the sort of the slow is smooth, smooth is fast is very interesting. And there's definitely a piece there about, understanding how you do certain things, that idea of a kata. And slowing down to do them well, slowing down to probe things with the North Star, slowing down to think about your design. They're all extremely useful things to do, identifying those inertia barriers. And then when you get the execution, you can go really fast. that there's definitely for me there's a shape of productivity. It's not this rapidly decreasing thing. It's more of an ebb and flow. I've always thought that for years. Productivity is an ebb and flow, and you need to keep that. If it's something that's always getting faster, that leads to burnout. Aye.
That.
So that's the crack. I think we'll leave it at that then. That was strangely profound. I don't know where it came from. Friday afternoon. So that's correct. So give us a follow us on the Serverless Edge at Twitter and jump on the blog at theserverlessedge.com and give us a like or subscribe. Thanks very much.
Girl.
Thanks, guys. Bye.